thanks to our sponsor, Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 364, where we're going to sit down and talk to Mike Fitzmaurice from WebCon about citizen development. Recorded live June the 18th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and Regional Director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #shifthappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. Back to the show.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you today?
Not as awake as you.
Man, I always do. I always get you. Well, hey, so my son had 6 a.m. swim practice, so I've been up, like, I always am at 5, but...
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I've been sitting in the back seat of my car for about 2 hours while he was doing swim practice because it's far enough away to where I can't come home, and because of all the pandemic stuff, you can't go hang out in a restaurant to get a coffee or go on sit on deck, so...
I heard you put your car in camping mode.
I did.
For working in the back seat somehow or something?
If I got out of my car and went and sat in the back seat, it would think that nobody's in the car, and so it would just shut itself off. But gotcha. I live in Florida. It's kind of hot and humid. And yeah, so I want the air conditioning to keep going, and I want the music to keep going. So if you put it in camping mode, the security system doesn't turn on. So if I move around, it won't set the alarm off. Or if I open the door, it won't set the alarm off. But the car effectively stays on. It's kind of like in your phone if you turn off the auto lock. That kind of feature. It doesn't go to sleep kind of thing.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So
nice.
What you been up to, Boot?
Dude. Well, Boot. Boot. Who's a Boot? I'm a bro or a dude. Cough. I'm a Boot.
We'll see. Let's see what you've been doing.
Well, I've been doing a few interesting home automation things. But before we go on, I just want to say huge congratulations to you for a massive milestone you hit this week with your business and completing. I believe you're calling it complete. Mm-hmm. Completing your Mastering the SharePoint Framework course, like finish the final chapters. I believe they're published.
Yep.
And it's sort of end-to-end complete now. And so that's what an epic milestone.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's a big milestone. It's a bit frustrating because it wasn't supposed to take 2.5 years to finish it. I estimate as well as I estimate projects, but it's done. It's content complete. So the big thing is that I don't plan to add anything new. Like, it's basically done. But because it's taken me 2.5 years, I promised that it would be evergreen. And I've been updating it throughout the last 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But I plan on going back and rewatching everything. And there's stuff that I know that needs to be refreshed. And there's probably a feature here and there that I missed. And so there's not going to be anything, I'm going to put in air quotes, there's nothing new that's going to be added. There may be like a lesson here or there gets added. There may be a lesson that gets re-recorded. But it's mostly done. And I think that's a big thing. And I think that there's one side, like business-wise, if anybody's interested in learning the SharePoint framework, if you want the course, now's the time to do it. Because on July the 1st, the preview pricing is gone. And the final pricing, prices go up to the final pricing. So there, once it's gone, it's gone. The preview pricing. But the thing I really like about this that's really mentally just helping me is I finally got this behind me and I'm really looking forward to the next thing. So I've got another couple courses that I plan on working on, some other stuff that I plan on working on. I'm not going to dive into it right now, but I'm just looking forward to moving on to the next thing. So it's always fun to finish a project and move on. So
nice. Yeah, and having watched the journey of the last couple of years of you doing this, I remember us sitting down at Ignite, can't remember how many years ago it was now, you were having a sort of a real moment of your life going, should I go do this? And just watching the journey has been really cool. And I think I mentioned on Twitter that it's been really inspirational, at least I'm sure to others, but certainly to me, watching you go through this and building a business like this and getting it out there and watching it be successful and landing it and the trials and tribulations along the way and things like that. So it's a big congrats and epic milestone.
I really appreciate that more than you probably know, because I got to tell you, dude, you are the reason I did. You're a major reason why I did this. I mean, you're right. I was on a very much a pooper get off the pot kind of moment when we were sitting the last day of Microsoft Ignite in Atlanta, and you did the best non-physical version of reaching across the table and slapping the crap out of me. I'm just being like, dude, this is what you do. You should be doing this stuff. And it was, yeah. It really was like, I was driving home. So it was like a 5-hour drive after that. And I thought about it and was like, I need to drop this other thing I was doing and just focus on this. I couldn't be happier that I did it. It's not that it's like, I wouldn't even say that this is like a chapter that's kind of done, part of my life that's done, because this is just one course. I mean, I plan on doing many, I have plans now for the next 12 months on what the next 3 or 4 courses I plan on doing. So it's always fun. Like when there's a global pandemic and you're kind of painted into a corner, it's amazing how well you focus and how productive you can get.
Well, I would give you a big congratulations hug, but I'd probably give you COVID. So probably not a good call.
Yeah, based on the way it's going in Florida, I'm not sure I would do it.
Yeah. Just for the record, I don't have it as far as I know.
And just for the record, I don't either.
Nice.
So, cool, yeah. Man. So what you been up to? Anything home automation stuff? I saw the patio. It looks beautiful.
Yes, I've been doing some outdoor lighting automation stuff, some irrigation automation stuff. I've got to get a bit more audio-visual automation stuff done now. You know, now I'm just bored with the automation. So now I've got to strive for things I really don't need and go completely over the top. So, just playing around with that really and watching the grass grow.
Awesome. Very cool. I get it, man. I've done the same thing. Like, oh, I can automate the shit out of this. And of course you go over automate everything and you kind of come back and it's like, only I know how to actually use my house. So now the kids and wife are all pissed at me.
Yeah, wife acceptance factor has to be high in this case. Definitely, or my life will be miserable. You know those moments you come home from work or you leave the office or you come out of that zone and you come home and technology is broken and all you want to do is like leap out of the second story window or throw the technology against the wall. I'm trying to avoid that at all costs, right? So for me, it has to work every time out of the box is very important because I just get wildly irate when my after hours are taken up with silly technology problems like that.
You know, it's funny. You and I talked about this like 2 or 3 days ago where like I was doing something with our home theater system, doing some changes to it. I was asking you like, hey, what would you do here and getting your thoughts on it? And came back to you. I was like going, yeah. So I just wanted to let you know that I didn't do anything that you said. And here's why, because I thought more about it. And if there were like 4 or 5 parts to what I was talking about, what I had before and what I was talking about doing, I removed everything and I'm down to 2 parts and things are just simple. And
maybe
I'm just at the stage of my life where it's like,
yes,
I love to play with stuff, but I damn sure want to make sure it's simple because I really don't want, if it's more than simple, it's like, yeah, I'm just not worth it. I'm happy to sell complicated, but my life, I want it simple.
Yeah. Simple is hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Hey, so we have, last week we did an interview, a show, which we're more on the news show lately, but we're trying to do more interviews. We are over-indexing on our interviews, but we had 2 awesome interviews lined up. We had one last week. We're talking about the cloud adoption framework with from Microsoft. This week, this is going to be fun. This is always fun to get together with a person that we've got on the show today. It's always fun to get together with this guy and sit down and have a drink. I'm looking forward to this. I know you're looking forward to this. So let's go ahead and dive. The hard part's going to be to put us on a hard block here. We got to stop at some point. So why don't we go ahead and dive into an interview? Sound good?
Sounds great.
This episode is sponsored by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night?
Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. And now, back to the show.
Okay, CJ, today we've lined up. Had to go through all the PR department and had to line up and get on his schedule. We've been on his schedule for years. We finally got him on the show today. I'm kidding. We've got Mike Fitzmaurice, the chief evangelist and vice president of North America, not of the whole thing, but of Webcom. He's joining us. He is recognized as a thought leader in workflow and business process automation, as citizen development in low-code/no-code solution platforms and strategies. Mike has more than 25 years of product consulting, evangelism, engineering, and IT management expertise, and spent the last year at Skybo serving as its CTO. His decade at Microsoft, that's how far I go back in SharePoint. I know Mike back from Microsoft, included being the original technical product manager for SharePoint, helping launch and shepherd the first three releases. It was Mike who birthed, developed, and led development evangelism on SharePoint, positioning it as a development platform and other gigs, included a decade at Nintex, yeah, as VP of workflow and product technology, and 5 years as director of IT, and then at the National Association of Broadcasters. Mike Fitzmaurice, welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show.
Wow, that is an intro that is, or bio that's meant to be read, not so much, that's a long bio. I regret having just done a copy and paste on that. It's kind of you to do that.
I did the exact same thing earlier this week. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I was presenting at a user group, and they popped a slide up for my bio, and I was like, holy crap, you used the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that's meant for eyeballs to skim, not lips to read. But
and in fairness, it would be... It would be a four-volume set if we really got into all your experience.
Right? So again, that's very nice of you to say. I have lucked out and been in the right place at the right time. And to slightly pat myself on the back, I think I did the right things. But yeah, I've been around. Yes.
Speaking of that.
Yes.
You're one of the few people that we bring on the show that I would like to tell a story about. Like, I have, everyone's
you
got
to
like,
tell a story about me.
I want to tell my favorite Mike Fitzmaurice story that is fit for print.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm going to clarify that.
You worried me for a moment. Okay.
No, but this is my favorite one. This is my favorite one. So There was a time, right when I start this off, you're going to be like, oh, I know where this is going. So there was a time years ago when for about 3 or 4 years, I was going to Norway, to Oslo, Norway.
Please continue. This is a good story, I must admit.
So I was going to Oslo, Norway about 3 or 4 times a year to go teach SharePoint development. And there was one time after going for like 2 or 3, after like 2 years, a year or two, something like that, you and I happened to be somewhere. And I mentioned that I was going and you brought up and you're like, so the next time you're in Oslo, I'm like, I'll be there in a few months. Mm-hmm. Next time you're in Oslo, you need to go into this bar, and you described it. And I'm like, yeah, I know where that is, actually. It's right on the main drag. It's right across from the park. It's right around the corner from this one. Yeah, I totally know where it is. Mm-hmm. He's like, you need to go in there, and you need to tell them that you want Mike Fitzmaurice's drink. And I was like, and 100% of the people in this world, with one exception, if they told me this, I'd be like, you're full of it, except mm-hmm. for you. And I was like, all right, let's see if this is really true. And I didn't believe it was really going to happen. So a couple months later, I go over to the bar. I'm in Oslo. My hotel is a couple blocks away. I go over to the bar. I walk in. And I've been in this bar, so I know the place. And I look at the bartender. And I'm going to do a terrible accent. But it kind of went in this direction. And I looked at the bartender. He's like, can I get you something? And I'm like, yes. I said, I'm supposed to ask you to have a drink, and the drink that I want is Mike Fitzmaurice's drink. And he's like, oh, you know Mr. Fitz. I was like, I'm like, son of a bitch. He nailed it. I'm like, all right, yep, that's the one I want. I was like, God, you gotta be kidding me. Across the world, let me get this.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I have a Fit story I'd love to share. This goes back to when I first joined Microsoft in 2002. And I was in New Zealand as a relatively newly minted Microsoftie. And we had tech heads down in New Zealand at the time. Because I was involved in SharePoint and Office and things like that, I was connected with Mike and Arpan Shah at the time, who were coming down for tech ed. And I had to make sure they were going to, you know, have a good time while they were in New Zealand, right? So I connected with Mike on the phone, and I vividly remember the conversation to this day. I said, Mike, what do you want to do when you're in New Zealand? You know, apart from tech ed, what are some other things you want to do? And he said, or you said, Mike, at the time, there are really only two things I want to do. One, I must see a haka. And two, I want to see the All Blacks play. And three, this is kind of optional, I don't really care so long as it's really, really weird.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so...
You killed Mike two birds with one stone with the first two. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike got off the plane, dropped his bags at the hotel. Arpan, I think, was on the same plane. I can't remember. But I picked them up and we went to an All Blacks game in Auckland, got there for the haka. We were sitting... The notice period I got on this was relatively short for an All Blacks match. And so we didn't even end up getting seats. We were standing in the what would be behind the goalposts, which is commonly considered the most feral part of the stadium at a rugby match, right? Because it's the cheapest seats and it's rough, right? So there were people, anyway, there was a lot of drunken debauchery going on around us and
much awesome.
Yelling. And I remember looking at Arpan, who was just completely petrified of what was going on. And Mike, who was just like, yes, this is awesome. So, that was my first.
That was a good time. That was a great night. Thank you. Thank you yet again for setting that up. You even bought the tickets. I appreciate that.
That was a fun time. That was great to see because I was just mesmerized at the levels of interest in Ea Haka and the All Blacks match was fascinating.
How can you go somewhere and not want to see things that are unique to that place? I did some investigation. Plus, I'd actually known about the Haka for years. It's awesome.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And just to be clear to all of our listeners, we have many more stories, but that's going to be the pay-per-view version of the podcast that we've not yet started.
Oh, that's a good idea. And we do need to talk about the cloud and technology and, you know, things like that at some point.
Exactly.
You know what? Let's dive into that. So you have a unique angle because thinking back, it's more popular today, but you were one of like the first, I don't know if you were the first, but you, at least to me, you were one of the first people that was really pushing this concept of citizen development, at least in our world, in the SharePoint world. Sure. So like, you know, way back in the SharePoint team, when I was first cutting my teeth in SharePoint, you really were pushing this. And I know it was pretty obvious. You were pushing this at Nintex as well.
Oh, sure.
And the direction they were going.
At the time, it was part of Nintex's motto at the time was workflow for everyone. It was part of the plan. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like with where we are with like low-code tools and where everything is right now and where things are going with citizen development as being a widespread term, what's your take on this? Are you happy with kind of where things have gone and kind of how things have evolved? You kind of start talking about this, and has the movement gone in the direction that you thought/hoped/expected it would go? Or is this one of those things where I got totally co-opted?
Yeah. what's the old... Maybe the best way I could describe this is I can't attribute the quote, and I apologize, but it goes, man plans, God laughs.
Man plans, humans plan, God laughs.
In the sense of, citizen development as a movement, low-code, no-code development has caught on in a big way, but it's also gone off in lots of different directions I never would have anticipated. Some wonderful and some a little bit on the scary side. The nice thing about it is, look, we advocated it. Yeah, I didn't coin the term citizen development. Gartner did. But I was a proponent of a long time ago, it was called composite applications or sites as solutions.
Yes.
Or building block-based solutions.
Composite apps, I remember that.
Process mashups. There's so many different ways to get at the same idea, but the notion of building, of having the development process closer to the people that actually owned the problem, or having the problem owner be the solution owner. There are many ways to manifest that. Mm-hmm. And citizen development is commonly thought of as just saying, you know, you kind of punt and say, well, let's give the problem owner the tools to build the solution themselves. And citizen development was kind of thought of by a lot of people as that. At the same time, there are always efforts to create low-code, no-code solutions. So one thing I am disappointed in is that the notion of low-code, no-code development has become conflated with citizen development. It happened honestly. It's a non-professional developer would have a hard time building things without low-code, no-code tools. So yeah, you need low-code, no-code development tools in order to be an effective citizen developer. But the issue is this, it's not about the tools. It's more about the citizenry and about, again, making sure the person that owns the problem owns the solution. What happened that I don't think is necessary, it's good. Well, there's no simple way to put this. Most of the people using low-code, no-code tools today aren't citizen developers. They're actual developers that are sort of punting and switching to this because they get more done in less time. That's actually wonderful, but I see tool manufacturers pivoting towards that group of people. And what's not happening in most cases are tool builders or platform vendors, you know, and this ranges from the simplest startup to Microsoft themselves. They're aiming at professional developers building things with low code. They're not aiming at problem owners being solution owners. If you look at, and I'm not picking on anything, I'm a fan of the Power Platform, but if you look at what people do with Power Automate and you tell me that someone without, you know, tech skills is going to have a good time with that, I'm not going to believe you. Same thing with Power Apps, same thing with Power BI. And so, and look, I'll pick every vendor I could make an example of. It's just everyone knows about the Power Platform. It's not for citizen developers, and I don't think it's honest to position it as such. There are, a citizen developer can take a template and say, I want to use that, and maybe change a couple of settings, and then party on. Totally a citizen developer scenario. When you start asking someone that doesn't do this every day to care about OData, I think you have odd expectations.
Man, in this virtual way of doing a podcast in this COVID world, I still want to reach across and give you a big old hug with that answer, because there is there, and I don't even know where you've been the last 2 weeks. So, but there's something that's been driving me crazy since the SharePoint designer days. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's something that just gets under my skin, because I everything you just said, I felt like you were like, it felt like it was coming out of my mouth. I felt like I was hearing you say it, because I looked at SharePoint Designer specifically in the workflow place, in the workflow area. And I could see you could get a lot of stuff done with a SharePoint Designer workflow. And it was a good tool. It was a good tool for the person that sat at the desk, at the front desk, or that was somebody who was doing, you know, understood the process like you described, they understand the business problem, they understand how things need to be automated and moved through, but they're not a developer. And they don't really have the tech chops. I mean, the most extensive part of their technical ability is probably creating a rule inside of Outlook. And you would then see, like, people would say, well, here's how you can go use a SharePoint Designer workflow to call a RESTful service. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. That's not the audience that should be doing this. And it's not so much saying that you shouldn't be allowed to do this. It's that you are now, if the company making that product is now going to build that capability into that product, now that product is going to have to start to be able to have more technical abilities. And you're now bringing the level of developer or technical experience, you're bringing that bar up and forcing people to have a higher bar to be able to use that tool. And then you're also kind of encouraging people who, I don't want to use a Visual Studio to go through and build a workflow, to go over and use SharePoint Designer. And now, like, maybe you didn't use these words, but to me, it's almost like the tool is being co-opted by the wrong audience. That's my frustration too, or at least, and it, just my personal frustration. And it's nice to hear somebody else say this, but it's my personal frustration with tools like Power Apps and Power Automate. Every time I switch over and I try and work with those tools, and I go through the simplest tutorials that want to build something that seems like, not like just 101 tutorial, but let me build something that's like something I would really use in a business environment, and not just a, let's give you in first 15 minutes, let's have you be successful with a tool.
Right.
I look at it and I start seeing things that I want to be able to do with this. And I'm like, I'm having trouble grokking how some of this stuff from the technical things, like how do I write the language to query a nested REST structure or RSS feed that's coming from you? I'm like, this is targeted more for someone with my mind and my background. This isn't targeted for someone who is like an executive or an administrative assistant to an executive who should be using these tools. And it gets so frustrating to me that it feels like these people are losing their tools, and it's the people you want to do. As a developer, I don't want to build workflow. I don't need to. I don't need a legal pad. Somebody explain to me, here's how this whole process is supposed to work, and go write code for it. Mm-hmm. You can articulate that stuff with a lot of the tools we're given, and you're losing those tools because there's this push to go closer to my side.
Part of it is over-reliance on user voice and deciding on what your development pipeline is based on what the loudest people are asking for. Look, that kind of input is actually important. I'm not anti-users or anti-user input. I actually believe paying attention to the audience is really, really important. But having a vision as to what you are and what you do and what the purpose of your handiwork is not something that should be decided by committee. It should be decided by, for lack of a better term, an artist with a vision. Yes, listen, but you need to make the decisions. And if you just do what everyone asks for, you wind up with a Franken platform. We're not there yet in terms of Microsoft's latest efforts, and I hope we never do, because I actually think what they're doing is quite nice. It's just not a citizen development tool. It's a low-code, no-code tool. A lot of people can get a lot of good done with a low-code, no-code tool. You eliminate spelling error. If a spelling error can break your app... That's code. I don't care if it's I don't care if it is an Excel-like function or, you know, something written in C++ or Python or R, anything under the sun. But if a spelling error can kill your solution, that's code. If anything that reduces that but doesn't take away options for me, I want to entertain. I think there's value in that. That said, the goal of citizen development, you know, the term comes from a Gartner analyst decided to come up with it from the notion of citizen soldier. And citizen soldier, you know, the classic Rome was like this. Switzerland today still is. You could argue that, Napoleon. Basically, when you try to have your citizens acquire a certain critical amount of skills so that they can contribute to the effort of defense, that's citizen soldiering. In other words, you don't just depend on a standing army of professionals. You have trained amateurs. But here's the important thing. It's not just about being an amateur, it's about being trained. Because not every citizen was a citizen soldier, and not every soldier was a citizen. Here's the other thing about being a citizen that's important, and why a professional developer can be a citizen developer at the same time under the right set of circumstances. A citizen is somebody who is of society, but also cares about society, feels a responsibility for the advancement of the group, has the big picture in mind, makes informed decisions that benefit everybody, not just themselves. A citizen is somebody with a certain sense of give back, a participant in society, not just a consumer of it. So if you are a citizen developer, you have a certain perspective and you care about some things that other people don't. And so citizen development is actually harder to nail. It does mean that you should probably have a sense of what the business is really doing instead of just doing the bidding of somebody else's requests. So that rules out a lot of professional developers that are just writing the specs. But it also means that it's not just somebody scratching a personal itch without thinking about how that affects the rest of the company. Citizen development is really hard to nail. It really, really is. That said, are we getting a lot of good done by letting anyone out there write low-code, no-code apps? You don't have to ask me. I checked with a couple of surveys that have gone on. One that asked, I think, close to the right questions was done at the end of 2018. So we're talking about a year and a half ago. And it was done by CIMI's Corporation Survey of Organizations. So they looked at citizen development projects and found that 54% were a failure within their first year.
Whoa.
Yeah. 28% had marginal results.
Ooh.
More than 20% were a clear success.
That's really surprising.
It is. Well, it shouldn't be, because professional development efforts don't exactly always have the greatest
success rate
in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Metrics. Keep this in perspective. Yeah, the metrics are better with professionals, but still, the key is citizen development is not magic. Now, we do have anecdotal evidence of where it's worked really, really well. And an example that Microsoft uses a lot is, I'm really apologizing, I can't remember the gentleman's name. He's a really good guy, but he's an employee at Heathrow Airport in London and wound up doing a lot of work with Power Apps. Major success story. Okay, so here's the thing I do want to drill down on. That guy, his job changed. He doesn't have his normal day job anymore. His job is to build Power Apps. You know what happened? He became a developer. He started out dabbling, scratching personal itches, because he had a true citizen mindset and thought about ways to make not just his life better, but everyone's life better, and started learning more skills. He became not a coder, but he became an actual developer, and that's his job now. So what really happened is he got plucked from the citizenry and turned into a proper developer. And yes, it's a success story, no two ways about it. But it is not somebody who works in the trenches, stays in the trenches, and just does a little thing on the side in order to solve a localized problem.
It's one of the things that shows me that, like, the where the tools are. I don't want to say the tools are failing, but it's where I get a little frustrated with the tools, where, and I'm going to pick on it because I just used this example a second ago. And again, I'm not trying to talk bad about the Power Platform or Power BI Automate or Power Flow, or sorry, Power Apps. It just, my experience is the one that I have that I get frustrated with. And I get that I'm not the target audience for it, and I shouldn't be the target audience for it. And I just haven't spent enough time with it. So it's not totally fair, but it's when you need to get something done. And I feel like you've always got to go talk to somebody who's a pro in it, like the gentleman from the Heathrow Airport. You get to be a professional with those tools. The tools that I see that are the best for this kind of an audience are the ones that you don't need training to go try and pick up these tools. There's three of them that come to mind. One of them is going to sound like I'm kind of buttering up to you, but like Ift and Zapier. Like, I've referred people to say, look, you want to get something done? Go check out Ift. Mm-hmm. You need to do a little bit more stuff, go check out Zapier. Yeah. And there's no, like, would you sit down and get on a call with me and show me how this works? Like, you're going to figure it out. It's pretty easy. You drop a block in, you drop a block in. It's easy to wire them together. And I mean, even Zapier lets you go a little bit, go Cody, if you want to go that way.
But
you can easily stay a little bit. You can stay away from it if you want. Mm-hmm. Another one, like, I mean, again, I'm buttering up to you, but one of the reasons I liked where you work is when we sat down and you showed me WebCon, you showed me the product. I didn't know anything about it. And within 5 or 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, I totally get this. I don't need you to show me anything else. Give me an account. I can start building stuff right away. That's where the citizen development no code tools really shine. And give me an option to do low code, maybe, but really, those tools
don't depend on it. Yeah, I'm with you on that. The thing I'll say in both those cases, those tools have become really good and at completely different levels, but what they share in common is there are certain design decisions that have been made that says, we do this. We're going to help you with this. If you want to do that, use a different tool. In other words, the constraints are actually important. They're not limitations to eventually get past in your development cycles. The constraints define what the product is designed to do and to be really good at. The constraints actually give you power and the ability to achieve excellence. Because if I have zero constraints, what I'm supposed to do next is really, really, really unclear. If I take away a bunch of decisions, I'll give you an example. Steve Jobs used to wear a mock turtleneck, white sneakers, and faded blue jeans every day of his life. And part of that was branding. But part of that was so he didn't have to waste time thinking about what he was going to wear every day. To some people, that's a trivial decision that you get done with in 5 seconds. But for other people, it is not. But that was just an example of a million things he did to say, look, I operate within these constraints, and therefore that frees me to do all these other things. There are some presidents that have basically done the same thing in terms of wardrobe, but I really don't want to fixate on wardrobe. Oh, okay, this is really dating me, but it's still fascinating. David Byrne, one of the founders of the Talking Heads, does plenty of solo work. Actually, he was the musical guest on the finale of Saturday Night Live this past year. Actually, no, he wasn't. It was earlier in the year. Whatever. The point is, it was the John Mulaney airport sushi episode. Mm. It was earlier this year. But David Byrne is still very much around, just not as noisy and widely known. But he does a ton of side projects. And one in the mid-aughts or early aughts was he started doing all kinds of crazy art using PowerPoint. That's right, PowerPoint. At that time, people were doing all kinds of interesting things with Flash. But no. He spoke to it exactly because the constraints were actually helping him. In other words, this is what you've got to work with. What do you got? And so you could do a lot less with PowerPoint animation than you can with Flash animation at the time. We don't use that anymore. But the point is, work within certain constraints and all kinds of other things become possible.
Yeah. You said something earlier. I was frantically trying to find the quote, but I remember this goes along with what you're saying right now, where mm-hmm. when that quote about the customer is always right, mm-hmm. there's a corollary to that one or a contrary quote to that one, which says, anybody who says that the customer is always right has never had to deal with a customer or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Has mm-hmm. always been a customer or something. And mm-hmm. it's a similar thing. You have to... When you let somebody else define what you're building in terms of your tool, mm-hmm. things just...
What the customer needs is always the most important. But the customer knowing how to articulate what they want, or assuming that the customer knows how to tell you what they need, mm-hmm. is sometimes a fatal mistake. What I've become enamored with is, for lack of a better term, citizen-assisted development. Because one other thing we didn't talk about is not every citizen out there wants to become a citizen developer. They really do want to explain a problem to someone and get the solution built for them. So yeah, it's a bit counterproductive to think that if you say, well, if you want the solution built, you're going to have to build it yourself. A lot of people are going to build crappy solutions. I think that contributes to that 54%. But some people will do wonderful and clever little things or that become bigger things later on. Our Heathrow guy, for example. But this is the thing I wanted to talk about. Citizen-assisted development would be another kind of paradigm in which the goal is not to get you, not you, Andrew Connell, you're a developer, but you, hypothetical stand-in person that represents users, non-professional developers that have needs. You out there need to be able to tell me what you want. And what we typically do is spend a lot of time in interviews coming up with specs, and you might show me other things that have happened in the past on other platforms that, and point out what you like and don't like and so on and so forth. And then I go, off and try to build something. And of course, money's involved. So we're all trying to be careful and hedging to make sure that things don't go crazy. The problem with that is people have a terrible time describing what they want out of nothing. People are comparatively wonderful at criticizing something they can see, which means what you really need to do is the focus ought to be on getting something built and then being able to change it fast, mm-hmm. frequently, and based on feedback. So the citizen needs to be able to participate in the process, but asking the citizen to do all the work rarely works. When it does, it's wonderful and worthy of celebration. And I believe tools like this should be in the hands of anyone who wants them. But realistically speaking, either citizen developers become proper developers or they build solutions that are just for themselves. But if a citizen developer tries to share something and they don't go through that metamorphosis, that's usually when something fails, because what works for me doesn't work for us, because I'm willing to accept certain trade-offs, you are not. And the moment I have to care about you, I start spending a lot of time trying to make everyone happy and generally failing at it.
Anybody that sat down and has done a custom project, where whether it's a development project or making dinner with somebody else or building mm-hmm. a house or something like that, you can start with all the plans. Everybody can come up and say, like, you know, this is exactly what I need, and this is how we're going to plan out to build it. And you get mm-hmm. the first little feed into it, and you start to see the framing of your house, and you're like, oh, you know what would be cool is if we did this.
Yep.
And, kind of, and you tweak it a little bit. And having the ability to do that and going, like, no, we can't make changes here. We're like, the railway has already been built. This train is mm-hmm. only going in that direction. We can't make any changes here. And we've built it all the way across the country.
Correct. And you told me this is where you wanted to go. Yes.
Yeah, I built what you wanted to build. I mean, and we're all on the same page, but it's my parents just built a custom house. And so it was like explaining it to me. And I didn't know anybody personally who did it and was that close to them, the process. And I'm watching it and I'm just, all of a sudden it hit me. I'm like, this is just like every freaking project I used to do, every website I used to build.
Yeah.
Every freaking thing. And it's like they're bitching about change orders. And I'm like, so did the
Agile versus
all
waterfall.
The time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, you know, and some things don't work for that. Some things do and some things don't. And there's a certain degree of, you know, the people that say that, oh, projects should be waterfall or projects should be agile. It's like, ah, there's usually a little bit of a mix in there that you got to, you got to get to at least a certain point and say, at some point, I'm going to give you something and get you to start pulling things back from me. The chef always tastes what he's making and he makes changes as he's doing it or she's making it. Mm-hmm. So this whole like citizen assisted development, is this where you see things are going more today? Or is it like where you think that they should go?
I think there's room for every approach under the sun. Some are going to work better than others, and it's a question of goodness of fit for companies. But citizen-assisted development would mean, if I'm going to build a solution for you, first of all, it's good if I sit out in the trenches with people. So in other words, but it's not, I still need some skills, or else I'm going to build yucky stuff. So think, instead of shadow IT, think satellite IT.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning I'm plugged into the mothership. We know what's going on. I've got skills, but I'm going to sit with you, not with them, because I need to be plugged into what you want. The second mm-hmm. thing is I and you need to be in sync as much as possible. So what I build needs to be quickly changeable and quickly explainable so that you can tell me either what I did wrong or what I could do better.
Mm-hmm.
Frequent iterations and so on. So in other words, citizens are assisting in the process by describing early on in general what they want and then reacting to successive iterations until we get to something we like. And even after that, we're still going to be making constant changes to things because the world changes and requirements change. It's not that they were bad before. It's just there are new opportunities or new things that we need to address. And so this notion of explainability and changeability matter a lot. If I build something and it's a generated solution, and then if I tweak the generated solution, I'm no longer able to go back to the easily described model or something like that. If I need to keep a Visio model in sync with a code project, or even a Power Automate flow or a Power App or something like that. There have been some nice efforts lately to allow you to create something in Visio and then generate a flow. Mm-hmm. That's great. But now when you start tweaking the flow, you can't go back to the Visio model and represent those changes. So you become the integrator and you become the explaining engine and so on. And that can be a problem.
Yeah, that's where stuff gets complicated.
So it comes down to this. You want to foster people with perspective and skills and turn them into actual developers. That's the Heathrow example. The other example is you don't want to put too much pressure on people developing itch-scratching solutions just for themselves to have to turn that into something formal for other people to use, because I guarantee you they have not thought about things like deployment and adapting connections when it moves from a dev environment to a test environment, or what happens to existing data or existing items in flight when you make a change to a living application. So asking them to just develop in production isn't practical either. Development is hard. And I will be the first person to tell you that you don't have to have a traditional education to become a software developer. The industry is still able to accommodate a lot of self-taught people, but you'll learn it either formally or informally, but you will learn things. The development process needs to be collaborative. Our goal should not be to displace development into the hands of citizens. It should be to collaborate with citizens in creating things. Low-code tools absolutely help with that. But it's naive to think that we solve our problem by giving low-code, no-code tools to everyone out there and saying, solve your problems yourself. IT is scared spitless about that, and for all the right reasons. 50% the right reasons, 50% it's all fiefdom stuff, and no. But they are right about the fact that it can create chaos. We can do better by adding a layer of responsibility, but responsibility that answers to the citizens as opposed to answering to IT.
Also, like, I think that one thing does help is helping educate them when they're in the process that they can be pretty wide at points, but we need to have some sort of guide rails that at least say, look, this is how far we want to be able to go with certain things. We don't want to be able to say, like, you know, this isn't everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. Those conversations that they'll end up having with someone about, you know, I want to go through and I want to do this, you know, with Visual Studio, or I want to do this and building code. So I'm a SharePoint framework guy. And they're like, I want to do all this stuff with the SharePoint framework. I'm like, you know, you can do that with Power Apps. They go, yeah, but I didn't think you like Power Apps. I'm like, yeah, but I know what the tool's for. And I know that if you write code, you're going to have to maintain it. There's going to be some baggage associated with it.
Right, exactly.
And I know there's some limitations that you're going to run into if you do Power Apps, but there's a balance between the two, and you're going to be able to
process. Limitations might not be so bad.
Exactly. Exactly.
The limitations, I'll map this back to something from way back in the day. The limitations actually free you up to get work done because you don't go down the rabbit hole of endless customizations. So if you can't have everything you want, you finally let go and get real work done. One of the reasons I believe the pivoting to Teams as collaborative workspaces using Teams instead of SharePoint sites is going on right now is because Teams, there's a lot of value in Teams workspaces, but one thing is you can't customize them very much. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we never got down to getting real work done in SharePoint sites is because we could customize them ad infinitum. To the point where people would like go down a rabbit hole of analysis paralysis and specs and branding and customization to the point where it didn't work like SharePoint anymore and we would half break it. But the other thing is that all the energy that went into trying to modify it or bend it to your will was energy not being used to actually address your business problem in the first place.
Just tweaking my style sheet when I don't have to get around to doing the project itself.
Correct.
I was going to say, at least it looks like the cool thing that they did in Photoshop now.
Right. If you have constraints, you can actually focus on the real job to be done and get it out the door sooner and then collect data and adapt it and start making changes and going into a cycle of perpetual improvement. And yeah, it's a wonderful idea to not necessarily use code for. There are some things only code can do. For the love of God, use code for that. But it's really about what can get the solution produced with the least amount of effort while still maintaining a sense of responsibility to other people, other applications, other assets.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's code, sometimes that's not.
That's a good point. It's a really good point. Well, cool. This has been a fun discussion on talking about citizen development.
It has. Here. And I know this is, you know, the cloud show. So relating it back to a lot of the really good tools are cloud-based. Either they're optionally in the cloud or they live primarily in the cloud. There, that's the tie-in.
We're just going to put a bow on this.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Mike, thank you very much for lending us your insights on this topic. This has been a fun discussion.
Thanks.
We now like to do a fun little part of the show that our listeners like to tune into, and it's called
Picks. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, actually, before we do that, let me take one little quick pause. This podcast is brought to you by Raygun. Raygun provides full stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. Okay, so we're going to come to your pick in just a minute. We gave you a heads up.
Oh, we're talking about picks. Okay. Yeah. Picks, no, I listened to the show. I know what's going on. Let's have at this.
All right. So we are going to go first. We gave you a heads up so that you would come prepared with a pick because we did this for a time. We were kind of springing this on people and we sprung it on one person. And I think it's one of the only parts of the show that we've really had to edit. Mm-hmm. We sprung this on Scott Guthrie when we got to interview Scott and we asked him about it. And it was the first time I've ever seen Scott Guthrie was, I don't want to say, I guess caught off guard might be the right thing. Mm-hmm. It might have been one of those like Operation Overload kind of things because he was trying to figure out which one do I pick, which one do I say? And he probably had to go through the whole thing in his head going, if I don't say this, then is that going to be bad for the business or whatever? And trying to think about responsibility and maybe it was like, can I be as whatever. Anyway. Yeah. We wanted to give you a heads up on it. So before we do that, though, your pick is probably going to be so much more interesting than ours. So we're going to get ours out of the way, and then we're going to come back to your pick.
All right.
Mr. Johnson, have you been picking your nose this week?
Plenty.
What you got for us?
You saw me during the break, didn't you? Yes. So this week, I stumbled is hard to say. I follow a guy on YouTube. I'm subscribed to his channel called Curious Mark with a C. Mm-hmm. And he restores old vintage hardware. And he sort of led the team that restored to working order one of the Apollo guidance computers from the original Apollo missions. And this last week, he published a video called Looking at the Original Apollo 12 Code Listing and the 1202 Fix. So for those space nerds among us, there are a couple of interesting things about this. The Apollo 12 code listing is a physical dot matrix printout of the entire code for the Apollo guidance computer that ran on Apollo 12. And one of the team that restored the Apollo guidance computer, a guy called Mike Stewart, ended up winning an auction to buy Don Isley, who was one of the original programmers from MIT, his copy of the Apollo 12 code listing before Lou. And so they show you through it. And it's assembly. It's a form of assembly, at least. And but this guy, Mike Stewart, he is the Apollo AGC guru of the world now. Like, this guy knows more about the Apollo guidance computer than I'm pretty sure anybody else still living, including the guy that wrote the code, I think. And so he bought this code and shows you through it. And what's really interesting is he shows you the bug fix that they made for the 1202 alarm that almost ended the moon landing on Apollo 11. So there was a whole set of alarms that went off. The 1202 alarm is the famous one. It had to do with radar returns and overloading the computer, and it almost meant that Buzz and Neil didn't land on the moon. Anyway, he shows you the spot in the code where they introduce the bug fix to fix that problem for future missions. And by fix it, what he really meant was just ignore it and continue. like a solid sort of go-to, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's the best try catch finally is the one that's just a try with nothing on the catch and a finally.
Yeah, it's basically the original on error resume next. If you've that's done awesome. VB before, everybody mm-hmm. will be cringing. Yeah. Anyways, this that's my pick.
That's a good pick. I jumped over to the video right when you started speaking and I saw the guy walking down the stairs and the guy walking behind him. I'm like, oh, I know these guys. I've watched these videos before.
There's a comment in there that says something like he pulls out a tape measure and measures it and says, oh, 6.5 inches of software. Like, it's like, you know, the book is that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Something that's like awesome. That. I think the number's correct. I'm not quite sure what the number was. But anyway, it's pretty funny. You're measuring the software in inches because it's all printed out. I thought it was quite funny.
Very good pick, my friend.
So what have you got for us this week, AC?
So a couple weeks ago, we did a show and we recorded the beginning, or we recorded a show that talked about how SpaceX was going to launch, do the first private mission to ISS, putting humans in space. And it didn't happen when we did our recording. They scrubbed the launch that day. And then they gave it another shot a couple days later, or a day later, one of the two. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get a chance to record it. And then it dawned on me, you and I never followed up on after the launch. We never like kind of had our debrief about what we thought about it. Because of course, I mean, we've been overloaded with it for a few days. And then we get back to recording a week later and it's like, I totally forgot about it. So since then, there was a post on, I'm a big Reddit fan. And there was a post on the SpaceX subreddit. And it was posted on Twitter as well, that a bunch of the software engineers from the SpaceX team that worked on a lot of the software for the Dragon capsule, Dragon crew capsule, that they were doing an AMA and asked me anything about just their job and how they built stuff and everything. And they were like, hey, look, you know, right now the Dragon's kind of like in silent mode while it's just sitting up there, but we got some time to burn. So ask us anything. They tuned in for it. It was an hour and a half long. You could submit questions ahead of time. I got my questions answered. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
But this was, I found this to be absolutely fascinating. I loved reading through these questions. They answered almost everything. There were some that were, and I forget what the acronym stands for, but there were some ITAR. That they couldn't answer because of ITAR. Yeah, so it's like the law that says you can't export certain things for information for foreign powers and stuff.
Yeah.
So national security stuff. But they answered just about all these other questions that came up, including things like, you know, the displays that we saw in Dragon were all Chromium-based browsers and the whole interface is done JavaScript. Now, it's not client-side. It was all done. It's all done server-side, C++, and that was just the displays. But there was one part, too, where they talked about, I thought it was hilarious, where they're like, what is the most crazy thing that you end up having to do here? And it was when they were standing at somebody's cube and they walked over, Elon walked over and they're like, look, we're not going to get the software done to be able to land in 2 weeks. We're not going to get the landing software done to be able to land the Falcon 9 on the drone ship. It's just not going to happen. And so they kind of looked at it and they said,
this is one of the original missions, not this is one of the original specifically. No, but yeah, one of the original missions. Yeah.
This is prior to them landing any of the Falcon 9s. And he's like, we're not going to have the software done to give you 100% confidence that we're going to be able to land it. And Elon's like, well, what can you give me? And he's like, what can you give me in the next 2 weeks? And he's like, I can give you 50%. Or Elon asked him, can you give me 50%? He's like, oh yeah, I can give you, we can deliver the software with 50% reliability or confidence that we're actually going to be able to land it. And he recounted the story that kind of went back and forth. And then some Reddit commenter, because he was referring to the specific flights, and somebody was watching the AMA, went and found the video for the one that landed. It was the mission. And he's like, we didn't really land. And it was the one that came in and it lost some of the power and it came in kind of at his side, hit the side of the ship and just exploded and took off across the side. He's like, but we learned a lot.
Yeah. Nice. No, that was a good, that was a good AMA. I thought there was really interesting stuff in there about, the different systems and the kinds of, ITAR is like an arms treaty between countries. So you don't inadvertently start sharing information with other nations that could lead to them building missiles and bombs and stuff like that. And rockets are generally all treated under ITAR because of that. So, yeah, they can't talk about certain things. But, yeah, it was fascinating.
It was a really good AMA. I really enjoyed it. So if you're a developer and you want to kind of see some of the behind the scenes and some of the stuff that they built, I was a little surprised at some of the stuff that they did. I was surprised, you know, that JavaScript and Chromium were being used as the display interfaces.
Yeah.
So, but it's pretty cool. All right. Mr. Fitzmaurice.
Ah, all right. Well, you guys were talking about places I've been and unusual stuff that I have either recommended to you or others and so on. And it occurs to me, how do I find these things is a question I get asked from time to time. And the real answer is conversations and just remembering a lot of things people tell me and remembering things that I read in passing while coming to something else. So there's no one place I go for, you know, where do I find me some weirdness? It doesn't work that way. But
the weirdness comes to you is what you're saying.
Weirdness comes to me, yes. But the one place that comes closest is this website, which is atlasobscura.com. Have you guys ever been there?
No.
I have not.
Okay.
Never heard of this.
Well, here's the deal. It specifically collects anecdotes and reports filed of odd things throughout the entire planet. For example, did you know there is an exact replica of the U.S. space shuttle in Gorky Park in Moscow? It exists.
No, I didn't.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
It's a real...
It's like the space station, the space shuttle you're talking about.
Space shuttle, yes.
Yes, Buran. Buran is the Russian.
There is a duplicate of an American space shuttle. It's not an American space shuttle. It was built entirely by the Soviets. It's now just, you know, collecting dust or people are playing with it in Gorky Park. Also in Moscow, there is a diner staffed entirely by twins. Underneath the airport in Dubrovnik, you know, to me, the most weird thing or the most interesting thing in Dubrovnik is not all the Game of Thrones stuff. It's the fact that underneath the airport is a subterranean wine cellar. You're in there amongst stalactites and stalagmites sipping wine. It's strange as all get out. There is a museum of broken relationships in Zagreb. There is, you know... CJ, you and I live in the Seattle area. The troll underneath the bridge in Fremont. And I think it's normal. Most people don't.
Huh.
The fact that there's a statue of Lenin and a neighborhood here is kind of weird. There's weird stuff everywhere. And Atlas Obscura tries to collect it.
That's really cool.
If you're going somewhere and you want to find something strange, look it up. And if you want to plan a strange trip, look it up. Atlas Obscura can help.
I remember, I think it was the first time you ever met my wife, Vicky. We were checking into a hotel in Barcelona.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you were leaving because you had been there for the week and we were just arriving. And we got talking about food. And my wife's really into food. And you said, do you want a recommendation? And Vicky was like, absolutely. And you said, just go to this place, restaurant, Quatre Gats, I believe.
Quatre Gats, yeah.
And you'll see what I mean. And so we rocked up to this place. We walked in and we were like, well, that's pretty cool. Wow. And we were just completely blown away. And basically every inch of the walls, the place was huge, were covered in original pencil and ink Picassos.
Yeah.
And it turns out he used to hang out there and just draw outside this restaurant, and they just used to take all the drawings and hang them on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so we dined amongst Picassos because of your recommendation.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you had a good time. the point is, one of many sources that could be consulted is Atlas Obscura. So
that's really cool.
It's a great place to get started. And even if you did everything on there, you would still have been to a lot of crazy, crazy places.
So I'm clicking through this, and I feel like I've been able to. I now have a digital way of stepping into your mind. part one. Because I part of this, and to our listeners, I love Mike. And I'll be completely honest. There are times when we are like at a conference or something, and then everybody's like, you know, what are you doing tonight? We're all gonna go, you know, this group's going to dinner here, this group's going to dinner here. And there are times when it comes up and it's like, yeah, so we're going with Mike to this place. And do you wanna go? I do it, I think twice, because one part's like going, oh hell yeah. And then one part of me is truly intimidated. As I'm just like, I don't know if this is a good call or not, right? But I'm clicking through this and I'm seeing a ton of really cool stuff. Makes me feel good that when I clicked on Japan, that I see a place that I found myself without finding going to the same, the robot restaurant. But I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I was like, but still, this is awesome. I mean, in the underground tunnels of Los Angeles, when you get the, this is so cool.
It is. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
There are three in Jacksonville, AC.
How'd you get there?
Do you know about these? The Treaty Oak, an octopus-like tree that was saved from destruction thanks to shady reporting. Do you know about that one?
Yes, I do know about that one.
The Jacksonville Interchange Spiral.
Wait, I think I know which that one is. Is that 295?
I'm not sure.
295?
Yeah, a very strange spiral-looking, like, alien structure from above. And the abandoned Annie Little Elementary School.
It's the interchange at I-295 and State Road 202.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right near my house. I went through it twice today.
Yeah, if you look at that from above, it looks like a knot that if you untie will open up a gateway to another dimension.
Yes.
Occupied by Cenobites. Don't do it.
Yeah, two interstates coming together, two very busy interstates. It's incredibly simple to get through. And it's like, but in the way they've done it, it looks complicated from a, I guess it doesn't look too complicated from above, but it is, cool. they did a really good job with it. It takes up a ridiculous amount of space. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, I come in from the south and I take the one going out to the east and then wrap around to go west to take my son to swim. And my car on autopilot can navigate the whole thing.
Brilliant. Oh man, cool. Atlas Obscura. This is great.
This is really good.
I love it. You can bookmark places too. That's cool.
Correct. Thank you very much, Mike.
My pleasure.
We will have this to everybody who's interested. These will definitely be in, absolutely, Mike's will be. We will have these in our show notes. So make sure you head to the website or subscribe to our newsletter to get these delivered straight to your inbox. The show notes go out via email the day after the show. So tune in. Cool. Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today, man. This is a lot of fun to have a chat with you again. Good to see you again.
It's always great to see you guys, even if it's only through mediated channels. I look forward to the day we can all be at the same place again without worrying about catching something.
It's going to be really interesting, or special. Interesting, that sounds like a bad way. It's going to be a really special time when all of us that are used to seeing each other at these different events, that we all can get together at one of these big shows. Mm-hmm. It's just everybody kind of sits around in the bar, and it's like, I wonder how many people are going to start crying.
Yeah.
There will be a cry, and more to the point, there will be a lot, at least from me, a lot of Russian bear hugs.
Nice. This is looking true. Forward to it.
Yes. Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.